Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Hey, welcome. We hope you are having a fabulous Friday. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Monson. Molly Vogt is on vacation this week. She'll be back on Monday. I hope she's having a great time. So you've got me today. And my goodness gracious, do we have a great show for you. It's World War II Project Day. We will be talking with Ray Pegram. He was a young radio operator on a C-47. And they went in and did some of the first drops with the Pathfinders at 12:15 a.m. on D-Day, June 6, 1944. So we're going to have him on the line in just a few moments. Wanted to talk about a couple of things out there. Certainly our prayers are going out to everyone in South Texas regarding Hurricane Harvey. It looks like things are getting really interesting down there. So certainly we as a country want to keep all of the people in South Texas in our thoughts and prayers. And anybody that's out there on those oil rigs in the Gulf, I bet it's going to be interesting as well. So our thoughts and prayers go out to all of you. And, you know, we'll certainly stay tuned to see what's going on there. The other thing is these big issues that are going on in America today, this divisiveness, this Antifa, this calling people names. I'm just really concerned about it. And it's going to be great to talk with Ray Pegram, because one of the things that is a real blessing in America is when we get to live days of just ordinary, commonplace, everyday kind of things. And I think that we need to start to have some real gratitude about that and be grateful to all of those that have gone before us, because we talk with young men and women. They were young men and women back in the 40s during World War II, who they gave up the blessing of ordinary, because they stepped forward and they fought tyranny and they fought evil. And so they didn't have the luxury of going to work every day and hugging their wives and hugging their kids and, you know, getting together with neighbors and friends. They gave that up, and they went to lands far from where they grew up to stand against tyranny and to stand for freedom. And I think that we need to get rid of hyphenated American. We are Americans. And these things that we have let divide us and put us into different identity groups for much too long, we need to put those things away, because a house divided against itself cannot stand. And so we need to get back to gratitude for liberty, for these amazing people who we stand on their shoulders. And we have a responsibility to pass on to the next generation what they have done for us. And it is truly an honor to have Ray Pegram on the line with us. Ray lives back east. Ray, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm fine. How are you, Kim?
I'm doing fine. Ray, I can't tell you, it is such an honor to get to have you on this show today, the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. And this show will be on our website, SoundCloud, probably within 24 hours. And people can go and listen to that. And I know that they're going to want to. And then people can also share it. You can share that SoundCloud link. And Ray, you can share that with your family as well. And I'm just really excited about this conversation. So, Ray Pegram.
Is it live now on your website?
It is live right now on our website as well, AmeriChicks.com.
Okay, I have some listening.
Fantastic. Well, welcome to all of you. So,
thank you.
Ray Pegram, you were just a young kid back in World War II. First question I'm going to ask you is where did you grow up?
Grew up in a small village, south of Spindale, in the country, actually. We called it Frog Level because it had a big swamp with a lot of frogs. But today's residents, they changed the name to Oakland, but I like the Frog Level.
Okay.
Anyway, I grew up on a farm.
Okay, and what state?
North Carolina.
North Carolina, okay.
Town nearest is, and where I live now, is Spindale, North Carolina, S-P-I-N-D-A-L-E. Got the name from textiles, spinning mills.
Right, North Carolina, there were a lot of textile mills back there. So
yeah.
Beautiful country. And where do you live now, Ray?
In Smithdale.
Okay. Very good. Well, welcome. Where were you, Ray Pegram, when you heard that the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor?
Well, there were a group of us friends playing touch football in one of my friends' yards, and I guess about 3 o'clock, Mr. Moore, who owned the house, came out and told us we better stop playing and come in and listen to the radio. And we all trooped in, of course, and it was President Roosevelt talking about Japan and declaring war.
So what went through your mind at that time, Ray?
Pardon?
What were you thinking? What went through your mind at that time?
Well, I decided almost immediately, I guess. I was 19 years old. I'd graduated from high school and was working in one of the textile mills where I later worked for 47 years. At any rate, I decided I'd stay home for Christmas and New Year's, and then I wanted to be a pilot, so I wanted to join the Army Air Corps. So I stayed home January 2nd. I went down to Spartanburg, South Carolina, where the nearest Air Corps recruiting center was. And to be a pilot, you were supposed to have had 2 years of college. But the enlisting officer told me, if you can pass the exam, we need to get so many people in the program that will be waived. So I passed the exam, but unfortunately, when they got to my physical, my left eye was too nearsighted, and so he told me I could qualify for a flying radio operator or a flying engineer.
Okay, now, Ray Pegram, we're going to stop that story right now. We're going to go to break. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. Kim Munson here with Ray Pegram. He's talking with us from North Carolina, and we're talking about World War II. He was a radio operator, and he's going to tell you how he got to that point. So this is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. We'll be right back. When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516, or visit her online at karen-levine.com and tell her the AmeriChicks sent you. Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Have a great night out and watch the best movies under the stars at the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. All new movies are a triple feature and only $8. Children under 12 are free. Stay for one or all three. 88 Drive-In Theater, the last remaining original drive-in theater in the Denver metro area. And they've been serving the community since 1972. Be sure to visit their delicious snack bar. Monday through Thursday, get their special pizza deal. One 12-inch pizza and two 16-ounce sodas, all for only $11. Be sure to try the delicious funnel cake with up to four toppings to choose from. For more info on movie showings and times, visit 88drivein.com. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks send you.
Hey, welcome back. Yes, we are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. Molly is on vacation today, so I'm manning the fort. And before we go back to Ray Pegram, World War II veteran, the movies out at 88 Drive-In Theater this weekend are Dunkirk, Annabelle, and Dark Tower. So it looks like it's going to be a beautiful weekend here in Colorado. So I'd say get out there, take the family, and have a great time at the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. So, yes, we are the AmeriChicks. I'm Kim Munson and Ray Pegram. We have you on the line, and we've gotten to the point where Pearl Harbor has been bombed, and you decided you were going to stay home for Christmas and New Year's January 2nd. You're down in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and you've gotten to the point where they said that you don't have, you're too nearsighted to be a pilot, huh?
That's correct, and So they said I could be a flying radio operator or a flight engineer, and which did I want? And I told them, well, whichever school had an opening first to send me to.
Oh, my
so,
gosh.
So I was stationed at several places. They sent me back home and told me to come back on January 6th with the smallest amount of my personal belongings I could bring, because I was going to get issued new clothing and everything. I would have to send my civilian clothes home. So I went back on the 6th, and a group of us were sworn in on the post office steps in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I went to Fort Jackson for about 2 weeks to get clothes and shots and all that kind of stuff, and then to Texas for basic training, and then several places. And it was all that was in. I was stationed at Pope Field about May of 42, and that's where the troop carrier was started. I was in a troop carrier. We dropped paratroopers and towed gliders. So, and at Pope Field, they found out I could type, so I ran the teletype and was a lake trainer operator. So I got out a lot of guard duty and KP and all that kind of stuff.
Well, that worked out pretty well, huh, Ray?
So I was later stationed at Dalhart, Texas, and then to Lyons, Nebraska, where the 434 Troop Carrier Group was formed, which I was a member of the 71st, 72nd, 73rd, and 74th Squadrons. And from there, they sent me to, they finally got a radio school going in Kansas City, Missouri, run by TWA, Transworld Airlines.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's where I went to radio school, and then back to Alliance, and we trained and then went overseas. So you want me to go kind of through what happened as we...
I do. Just very quickly, Ray Pegram, though, for our listeners, what did a radio operator do exactly?
Well, we had quite a bit of radio equipment on the plane. We studied enough mechanics that we could maintain all the equipment. We had intercom equipment between the positions on the plane. We had plane-to-plane RF communication radio, and we had tower equipment to contact control towers, and then we had a long-distance radio system that I could tune in almost anywhere in the world. So I maintained that equipment and made sure it was operating for every flight and every operation we had to do. So that was my job, to maintain the equipment and make sure it was in good operating.
Okay. Now, between going to radio school and then getting to D-Day, what happened during that time frame?
Well, we went overseas from Alliance, Nebraska. We went to Fort Wayne, which was our port of debarkation. The planes was equipped to fly overseas, put in extra fuel tanks and that sort of stuff. And so we left about the first day of October, I think it was, and we flew the northern route to England. We made stops at Presque Isle, Maine, Goose Bay in Newfoundland, Greenland, Iceland, Ireland, and then England on October 7th, 1943.
Okay.
And so we were stationed basically at Aldermaston. And from then until after D-Day, we later on in that year, we moved to France for the drop of paratroopers across the Rhine. But we dropped all the D-Day operation was from Aldermaston or nearby bases. In fact, we didn't drop any troopers from Aldermaston. That was had gliders there, and I made three trooper drops first, and they were from one of the nearby bases. We just trained in England until
sure.
D-Day.
Okay. What was it like coming up to D-Day? My understanding was the weather. We're talking with Ray Pegram, who is a World War II veteran, a radio operator on a C-47. The C-47s were the workhorse of World War II, the workhorse plane of World War II. So as you're getting closer to D-Day, I mean, was there an excitement? My understanding was the weather was crummy. What was going through your mind? What was happening?
Well, we knew things were getting down to... It was going to happen soon. None of us knew the date. And they moved my squadron, the 71st Squadron, down to a neighboring base where the paratroopers were, near where the paratroopers were stationed. And we moved down, I think it was on the 4th, and we were supposed to have D-Day was supposed to be in the 5th, but the weather was bad, and so they just put us in barracks and kept us under lock and key until the 6th then.
Okay, so then what time did the action start to begin? So it would have been the evening of the 5th. So you probably got your orders. You guys realized something was going to happen because you told me that you did the very first drop of the Pathfinders into Normandy, France at 12:15 a.m. I mean, that I just can't even imagine how exciting that must have been.
Well, we were all together, the pilots, all the crews were together in a pretty large tent, and we were briefed and told what we were going to do. And we started loading those Pathfinders. Colonel Couch, I believe it was, the one who led the Pathfinder group. These were the Pathfinders of the 101st Airborne. Mm. We were in that first group, and we flew around Cherbourg to come in from the southwest side of the peninsula for surprise element, I suppose. And so we were coming back across Cherbourg when we dropped the Pathfinders. And then we came back to England, and we took two more loads of paratroopers. These we just went straight across the channel. And then by then it was getting daylight, but we made two glider tows. And they finally told us after that we could go to bed.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Ray Pegram, this is the AmeriChicks, Kim and Molly, and this is Kim Munson talking to Ray Pegram. Ray, I've seen pictures of D-Day, and just there's ships and there's planes. I mean, were you coming in making these drops, and you were quite low, and there was all kinds of enemy fire, if my understanding is correct?
Yes, we started receiving anti-aircraft fire before we got to the drop zone, but fortunately my plane, we lost some planes, but my plane was never hit. I had over 1,000, or around, not over, just under 1,000 hours of combat flying, and my plane never really got a scratch. But there was any aircraft fire, and we had a lot of fog and clouds to contend with for those night drops. So it was a very difficult situation. But we dropped them, and of course, then in the morning we could see all the activities on the channel when we were towing the gliders across. We also hit some fog bank with the second tow, and that was kind of harrowing too. But we made it through all right. And the next day we made another glider tow, and so that was a total of three paratrooper drops and three glider tows. And then the engineers cleaned all the obstacles off of Omaha Beach. And when the tide was out, it was a nice, firm beach. And we landed on the beach and brought in ammunition and put the stretchers up in the plane. And I believe we could carry 15 wounded men back to England. And so we did about 8 or 10 of those. And so that was the extent of the D-Day operations.
Well, I'm just kind of breathless thinking about this. I did not realize that you guys came in and then landed on the beach. As I was talking to a young guy yesterday and was prefacing what we were going to be talking about today, and I said, I think he said that they landed. Was it a C-47 that you landed on the beaches of Normandy, or what was it exactly?
Yes, the sand was very firm. If you went over there today, which I have, I've been back four times now. So it's almost, it's like a good firm field to land on. And the C-47's it's an amazing airplane. It doesn't require a lot of space to land or take off, so it wasn't a problem. They did have the metal, engineers put down those metal strips for us to pull up close to the bank to unload the ammunition and load the wounded on. But we just used the sand for the runway.
Wow, that had to be rather thrilling. I can't even imagine on that. So D-Day, basically my understanding is they did get the beaches secured within 24 hours. Is that right? Am I recalling that correctly?
Yeah, basically that was right. But there was, you know, Omaha Beach especially, our men suffered a lot of casualties. On one of my trips to back to England in 2000, England and France 2012, I went with a paratrooper friend of mine. He was in the 101st, and we made a trip over there, and we joined. There were five of us veterans in the group, and one of them was from Rhode Island, and he was in the 1st Armored Division, and they were the first ones on Omaha Beach, and so it was a miracle that he survived, and he was able to make that trip with us. In fact, he's still alive today. I'm in touch with his granddaughter on Facebook, and he's got Alzheimer's, but he's still alive today.
Oh, my gosh. So we are talking with Ray Pegram, and he's a World War II veteran. He was a radio operator on a C-47, and on D-Day, they made six different drops, three sets of paratroopers, and three glide tows. Is that correct? Did I get that right, Ray?
Yes. Three glider tows, two on D-Day and one on the 7th.
On the 7th. Okay, very good. Now, this was just the beginning for Ray Pegram. He actually was involved in a whole lot of things going on in the European theater. So, Ray, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, then we're going to take it from D-Day and what happened from there. So this is the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. Molly's on vacation, so I'm manning the fort. We are talking with Ray Pegram, a World War II vet, and he dropped Pathfinders in at 12:15 a.m. On D-Day in the French countryside, and these are fascinating stories. It is an honor to talk with him. We will be right back.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. We are talking with Ray Pegram. We have him on the line. Before we get to that, I just wanted to mention something to you. If you ever have computer challenges, you are in luck, because EvanYourITGuy.com is a network of IT professionals, and they are ready to provide on-demand help with your computer needs. And so they're going to be going live. They're getting everything going for this great new little company. They're hiring vets. And so if you're looking for a job, go to EvanYourITGuy.com. Another great thing that you can do is go to their website, and they've got these great little webcam covers for your computer. And if you go ahead and sign up for that, they will send one to you, and be sure and tell them that the AmeriChicks sent you. So this is EvanYourITGuy.com. They plan to be going live probably mid-September, so get on their website, sign up, and then that way you'll know when everything's up and running. So again, that's EvanYourITGuy.com. So welcome back, Ray Pegram. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and we have World War II vet Ray Pegram on the line. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, great. We've gotten to D-Day, so what happens from there?
Well, after D-Day was over, after several days and, well, several weeks really, I guess, Patton began his drive across France, and we made many, many supply runs, mostly gasoline, to Patton as he drove across France. We painted a little boxcar on the side of the plane, and I don't know how many they are, but it reaches from the nose all the way back to the door.
Well,
we made many, many, many supply runs for with gasoline and other supplies for Patton. And then in March of 45, we moved to Reims. Well, before then, of course, in September, we had the Holland invasion from England. I was about to skip over that, but the Holland invasion, we dropped two paratrooper drops into Holland and many supplies. We did not tow any gliders into Holland. All of ours were paratroopers. So we made two drops and then many supply drops, dropping supplies by parachute from the air. We did quite a bit of that. And then we also, in December, dropped supplies to our troops that were isolated in Bastogne. I'm sure you know enough history to remember that. So we dropped supplies to them in December.
Well, and a couple of things, Ray, when we were talking, doing our pre-call on this, you said that regarding getting gasoline to Patton as he was, you know, moving across Europe, you had these 10-gallon, 10-gallon, I guess, containers of gasoline, but you said that you landed in cow pastures to get that to him, right?
Yeah, any firm ground that with a long enough strip, that's where some of the ground forces of Patton's would find a place for us and direct us to it. So we landed in pastures and fields, everywhere the ground was firm enough. Well, I'll tell you one little incident. We a Jeep pulled up to the plane while we were unloading the gas and wanted to know who was in charge. And we told him Major Mann. And Major Mann was our squadron commander, and he was my pilot. I was on his crew. And so they wanted to talk to him, and he came out and out of the cockpit, and they told him that General Patton wanted to see him, so he left in the Jeep with them, and they came back a little bit, and so we were all curious as to what he wanted, and I won't use the language, I'll use initials. He said, well, he appreciated all that gasoline we were bringing, but would we bring him some GD socks? So the next day, we took him a load of socks.
You took him a load of socks. Yeah, that was pretty important back then. And one thing about Bastogne, the Battle of Bastogne, was it our 82nd Airborne Division? Hadn't they gotten kind of caught there in Bastogne, as well as some of the 10th Armored Division? I'm looking at this. And so on December 22nd, German emissaries asked for the Americans to surrender. And General McAuliffe, I guess, very tersely said, nuts. And then it said the next day the skies cleared and you guys were able to get them food, medicine, and the weapons that they needed.
Yeah, that was right. It was, the weather was very bad, so we had to wait till it cleared so we could drop stuff, and then we did that. And then we just did supply runs, I guess, until the Holland invasion in September.
Okay.
That was September 17th through the 19th. We made two paratrooper drops and then dropped supplies, and that was our extent of the Holland invasion.
You know, were you taking a lot of fire as you were dropping in these supplies? Because you make it sound like it's just kind of easy. We just drop those supplies in. What was it really like?
Well, the first mission, we did get quite a bit of anti-aircraft fire. We were headed right toward one big emplacement, and we had two P-38s who were escorting us, and I read this incident in a book I got from the Duke Library, and I made some copies of the page, but I witnessed this. They were escorting us, so they saw the anti-aircraft fire coming up ahead of us, so they peeled off, and one of them dove down and dropped his bombs, and He knocked about half of it out, I guess, but they did shoot him, and his plane started smoking, so he pointed the nose in the air and evacuated. He ejected himself, and we watched him go down. I guess he was taken prisoner, but the second P-38 finished knocking that emplacement out, so that probably saved my life and a lot of other lives, too. And we would have, I guess we used to say they shot everything at us but the kitchen sink. We had even a lot of rifle fire because we were such low altitude. But at any rate, after the first mission on the Holland invasion, it wasn't too bad because our ground forces moved up, and where we had to fly to drop the supplies, we didn't have much problem after that.
You know, Ray Pegram, I want to go back and ask you a question about D-Day and the night when you flew from England over to the French countryside. You guys dropped some Pathfinders at 12:15 a.m. My understanding, because we have interviewed Guy Whidden, who I think I was looking at some pictures, and you guys were in some pictures together, so I think you guys must know each other. And he said that you guys were basically kind of skimming across the channel, that he could feel, the spray of the channel coming up. So, I mean, you guys were coming in pretty low.
Yeah, we came in pretty low. They had fighter pilots were up higher because our Air Force controlled the air, so we did not have any enemy airplanes. All we had was fire from the ground, and we did fly pretty low over the channel going in. It wasn't too bad that first drop because we went around Cherbourg and we were higher altitude then. But when we went straight across the channel, we were pretty low, yes.
Okay, so that would have been with the paratrooper groups there. Okay, very good. I just wanted to ask that question. So we're moving forward. You guys have dropped supplies, the Battle of Bastogne. You've helped get supplies to Patton as he's going across Europe. What's going through your mind, Ray Pegram, at this time? I mean, are you guys just getting up every day doing your job? I mean, what are you thinking at that time?
Well, I was mainly just observing. I would, because I didn't have to man a radio or anything, so I'd go back and look out the windows to see what was going on. So I was just very much interested in seeing everything that was happening. And, of course, we had the doors off when we dropped paratroopers, so we could stand in the door and look out. But I was just interested in what was going on. I don't ever recall being that afraid. I don't know. Just don't remember.
Just getting up and doing your job every day, huh? So
yes.
Okay, so you did the two paratrooper drops of Holland. I think you said it was the 101st. So then where do you go after that? Are we now at Battle of the Bulge or not quite?
Yeah, we did that. You know, that was in November and December. And then we just flew supplies here and there. And we moved from England to Reims, France in March of 45 to get ready for the drop across the Rhine. And so we did supply runs and we evacuate our prisoners that were that could be evacuated. And then on the Rhine drop was March 24th. We just made one parachute drop, and that was we wasn't across very much. Anyway, we crossed the Rhine River.
Hey Ray, you know what? Hold that thought. We're going to go to break. We're talking with Ray Pegram. He is a World War II vet. He was a radio operator on a C-47, and he was at D-Day. He was at Operation Market Garden. He was at Bastogne. He was at Battle of the Bulge. And now we're going to find out where he's at next.
And now, the Lens of Liberty. Here is Helen Krebel.
Like millions of other Americans, I recently replaced some windows with more energy-efficient windows, thinking I was saving on energy bills and being a responsible citizen. But I found out that even something simple as replacing a window requires a permit from the county and the fees that go with it. Building permits were originally for public safety, and none of us want buildings to collapse. But if we look through the lens of liberty, we realize that too often such permits are not really about safety, but about revenue for the county. Some advocates may want to protect me from an installation that may not save as much energy as I wanted. But isn't that really my responsibility? Americans believe in limited government because we believe in self-government. We need the government to protect us from foreign invaders, not from drafty windows.
For more information, go to lensofliberty.org. That's lensofliberty.org.
Yes, we are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. Molly Vogt is on vacation. Be sure and check out our website, AmeriChicks.com. We have all kinds of great information there. It is Friday. It's a fabulous Friday, and we are honored to have on the line with us World War II veteran Ray Pegram. And Ray was a radio operator on a C-47. Those C-47s were the workhorse of World War II. They delivered supplies, dropped paratroopers. They towed the gliders. I mean, they were really a great plane. And Ray Pegram made sure that all of the radios did what they were supposed to be doing. And he was on a C-47, did six different drops between June 6th and June 7th, 1944, and then went on into Europe, supplied General Patton with gas and socks. And now we are getting near the end of the war. So, Ray Pegram, you said that we are now, March 1945, and we're starting to drop across the Rhine. Is that correct?
That's correct. We were stationed at Reims, France, and that was one drop on March 24th. We wasn't over in territory very long, probably 15 to 17 minutes, because we just went across the Rhine River and dropped the troopers, and we received a commendation for putting our paratroopers right down on the X where they were supposed to be. Anyway, we just had one paratrooper drop, and then, of course, we stayed at Reims until after the Germans surrendered, and then we flew into Germany and brought out our POWs as they were released from the POW camps, and we brought a lot of those out before we left to come back to the States. At any rate, that ended our combat mission, was to drop across the Rhine. One interesting thing you might be interested in, we were ferrying the 101st down to Nice, France, for their R&R, and we happened to be down there, and we were spending the night. We took a load down, and we were going to bring a load back the next day, and we happened to be in Nice when Germany surrendered, so that was some wild celebration in Nice, France, that night.
Wow, because you guys—I mean—that was somewhat unexpected then at that time, wasn't it?
Pardon?
It was a bit unexpected that they were going to surrender at that time.
Yeah, that's right. We, of course, we didn't know when it was going to happen, but we knew they were defeated, and of course, we didn't know when it would happen. So, but we were all happy that it happened, and we flew out our liberated POWs, and then we got ready and came back to the States got ready to come back in June.
Okay.
Came back to Southern Route. We received some medals. If you're interested, I can tell you what we received.
Sure. We want to know. Yes, absolutely. This is Ray Pegram.
I got, we had the Air Medal with two oak leaf clusters. And then we had the, got a list of them here somewhere. Okay. Here they are. We had a unit citation, and then, of course, the Good Conduct Medal, and then the Europe and American Victory Medals. The main one was the Air Medal with the oak leaf clusters. That was for the combat missions. So that was it. We came back then. We landed in Savannah, Georgia, on July 1st, and left that airplane and came on a 30-day furlough and went back to Fort Wayne, Indiana in 30 days, and we're getting ready to go to Alliance to get new airplanes, and they dropped the two bombs on Japan, and I never did have to go invade Japan. And that was good because they had told us there would be at least 60% casualties.
Well, I guess they were managing expectations on that. That is just astounding. There is a reason why you guys are called the Great Generation. It's just amazing to me that you guys all did what you did, and really, really appreciate that immensely. Let's go back just a little bit to, you said you brought our POWs out of Germany. Were they in okay condition, or, you know?
Some of them were in pretty good shape, and others were not. The ones that were able to work on farms, well, they were in good shape. But those that were held in prison camps, they were very skinny and you know, could tell, hadn't had enough to eat, all that kind of stuff. So we had some of both, some pretty good and some not so good.
Okay. So we are talking with Ray Pegram, a radio operator on a C-47 in the European theater. What happened when you came back to the States then? The war is over, and so what did you do after that, Ray?
After I got out of service?
Yes, please.
So I went back to the textile company that I was working for before I went in. It was owned by a local gentleman there here in Spindale, and I had a pretty good job before I left, and he told me when I got back, he said, I've got a good job for you, or if you want to go to college, I'll have a job for you, but I've got a good job now if you want to stay. So I was getting close to 24, so I just stayed, and I was with that company for a total of 47 years. We were eventually bought out by the New York firm, but I actually became president of that company for 14 years before we were bought out by the New York firm, and I stayed with them until I was 65, and then I retired.
Okay. So what have you been doing for the last 30-some years then, Ray? I said, what have you been doing for the last 30 years? Because you're 94, right?
Well, after I retired from the company, there was a plant in Gastonia, North Carolina, that wanted to manufacture the yarn we'd been making and selling to the cable industry. And he wanted to know if I would sell that yarn for him, if he could manufacture it. And I told him, yes, I would. So I worked really until I was 87 before I retired. My wife would travel with me. I was just a free agent, so to speak.
Okay.
If I sold, he paid me a commission. If I didn't sell, he didn't. But it was very good for me, and I enjoyed that very much. Even after I retired from the company.
Well, truly an entrepreneur. We're coming to the end of the show, and Ray Pegram, it has really been an honor to get to talk with you today. I know that our listeners have learned so much, and I just thank you so much for sharing all this with you. What is something that you would like to possibly say to the to our young people out there in America? What message would you like people to know?
Well, I would say to young people today, of course, I was a history buff, and I believe maybe this time the schools are not teaching as much history as I would like to see taught. I would hope you would learn history, because you learn from history so as not to repeat it. And I wish that more history was being taught today, and I would encourage young people to take all the history they can in school and know what happened in our past. I've had a good life. I'm now 94. I lost my wife in 2003 with Alzheimer's, and so I've still lived by myself, maintained my own home, and health is reasonably good. And I thank you for this opportunity.
Well, Ray Pegram, God bless you. Thank you so much. It's just been a delight to get to talk with you today and to share your story. So that is Ray Pegram, World War II vet. Thank you so much.
Mike, I make one more sentence.
Sure.
I have two children, one in Raleigh, my daughter. She's on the faculty at North Carolina State University, and my son lives in Cleveland, Tennessee, and operates his own company.
Well, fantastic.
I have two children, yeah.
And hopefully they're listening right now.
All right. that.
Okay. Thank you, Ray Pegram. And, you know, that is so interesting that Ray would mention history. I was at an event last night and was talking to a friend of mine who had gone to back to school night at one of the area high schools. His daughter is in high school, and he happened to meet with the history teacher. And he said, so when are you going to, you know, what classes are you going to be teaching? Where do you start with American history? And the teacher replied that they were going to start at 1865. Now, that is at the end of the Civil War. And so our friend asked us in the group, he said, where would you start with American history? And one of my friends replied, Jamestown, where America really began. And we are doing a disservice to our children to not teach them the complete history of what is going on in America, or American history of where we started and where we've gone. And I think that it's time for us, we need to stand up and make sure that our kids are learning the history of America. It's not been a perfect history. However, America has lifted more people out of poverty. The American idea has lifted more people out of poverty than any other social contract in the history of mankind. And the fact that we are getting to talk with these guys who were, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old, when they went to serve and when they went to stand against tyranny, both in Europe, in Germany, against Hitler and the Nazis. And Nazi stands for the National Socialist Democratic Party. And then also, of course, standing against tyranny and the Japanese in World War II. And I think that we have abdicated our responsibility to ourselves and to our posterity here in America by not making sure that we have been vigilant to teach what has happened and to be honest about it. And I think that we need to get away from hyphenated Americans. We need to get back to Americans. One of the World War II vets that we had on several weeks ago was Levi Martinez. And he said he is not a Mexican-American or a Hispanic-American. He is an American. And I think that we have got to get back to that. This divisiveness is tearing us apart, and we need to come back to some kind of unity here in America. So it has really been an honor to get to talk with Ray Pegram today. These interviews are on our website, americhicks.com. Typically, they're up within about 24 hours. We're trying to speed that up, but typically they're up on the website within 24 hours. We've got a big week planned for you next week. We're going to be having these important conversations. We are Sleuths for Truth. We're the AmeriChicks, Sleuths for Truth, and we are looking at issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And we are educating, inspiring, and then encouraging us to go out and engage in this battle of ideas that is raging in America today. We are at an ideological Normandy. So with that, Ronald Reagan's quote, freedom is never more than one generation from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do. Or one day we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was like to be in the United States when men were free. This is the AmeriChicks signing off. We'll talk to you on Monday.